morning, church. Good morning and welcome to Riverside. So glad all of you are here today. And if you are joining us online, thanks for being a part of Church Online today. We're so grateful for your presence and so excited about this time of year. I don't think it's any secret that this time of year really is one of my favorite times of year. I really do. I love it all. I love the Christmas songs. I love Christmas cookies. I love going out and cutting down your own Christmas tree like Clark Griswold and dragging that thing home and setting it up in your house. I love movies by the fire, and I'll confess, even the occasional Hallmark Christmas movie. As long as we can play Hallmark Christmas movie bingo, I'm all in. It really is for me, and I think for a lot of us, it's a wonderful time of year. And I will say, I do know that for a lot of people, this isn't the most wonderful time of the year. I get that, and I want to just acknowledge that. I understand that this holiday season for a lot of you may be hard, and that could be for a lot of reasons, and I want to acknowledge that pain, that hurt. But there is a sense in which this time of year, when Christmas rolls around, things are, at least for a moment, for a lot of people in a lot of places, it just seems like things are the way they're supposed to be. There's a coming together that happens. That is just unique to this time of year. Christmas is one of those times of year when we come together, and it seems like at least for a moment, everything changes. And that happens in a lot of small ways for a lot of us in a lot of different ways. But in 1914, that happened in a really big way. If you know your history, 1914, this is right in the middle of the First World War. And this was a bloody conflict. Millions of people lost their lives. It was a season in which it seemed like the whole world had entered a new kind of darkness. Paul Hubb wrote from Wartenberg these words to his wife from the front lines, from the trench warfare of World War I, this bloody conflict. He wrote in a letter, "My dear Maria, I feel so terrible. I'd rather not write to you. Every day spent here makes it clearer to me how beautiful home is." What a stirring of feelings that word home brings out in me. I've lived through such horror recently. No words can describe it. The tragedy all around. Every day the fighting gets fiercer and there is no end in sight. Our blood is flowing in torrents. All around me is gruesome devastation. Dead and wounded soldiers, dead and dying animals, horse cadavers, burnt out houses, churned up fields, vehicles, clothes, weapons. I didn't think war could be like this. First World War, such a bloody conflict. New technologies had been introduced. Now we've got airplanes and we've got U-boats and we've got machine gun fire. We've got tanks and literally millions upon millions of people are losing their lives. One of the gravest parts of this war was the trench warfare that ensued. The Germans, the British, they've dug out these trenches, sometimes only separated by a few feet, and they go down into the earth anywhere from 7 to 12 feet. The land between is known as no man's land. And if you can imagine, especially in those winter months when Christmas rolls around, it's freezing cold. These trenches, they're damp, they're dark, they're wet. They're cold, and soldiers are sleeping, living, fighting in these trenches day in and day out. Otto Dix, who's a German expressionist artist, described it this way. He wrote, "Lice, rats, barbed wire, fleas, shells, bombs, underground caves, corpses, blood, liquor, mice, cats, artillery, filth, bullets, mortars, fire, steel, that's what war is. It's the work of the devil." So it was during World War I in 1914 that something unexpected happened on Christmas Day. Soldiers on both sides agreed to something that wasn't sanctioned by their superior officers. They agreed to meet in the middle, this place called No Man's Land on Christmas Day, and they declared between themselves a ceasefire, a truce. And they met in the middle and they sang songs. They played games. They climbed out of these trenches that were lined with barbed wire, and between the barbed wire, they played soccer. They swapped tobacco and newspapers and food. And that day became known as the Christmas Truce of 1914. Or just for a few hours, these men who had been fighting and killing one another declared a ceasefire, a truce, on Christmas Day and decided to come together. And for the moment, in the middle of what was a brutal conflict, a brutal war, there seemed to be just a hint of peace on earth. I don't know about you, but it feels like we're living in a world right now where it's hard to imagine what peace on earth would even look like. You think about the last couple of years and all that we've come through. Here we are, we're just a little over 100 years later, and it still feels like we're living in a world that's at war. There's constant conflict. There's constant disagreement. There's all this tension that's always seemed to be rising, pressure that's building. I mean, let's just talk about it. Let's just talk about politics for a moment. You want to talk about that? Yeah, let's not. I mean, just the idea of talking about politics in church, did you feel your blood pressure start to rise a little bit? So instead, let's talk about COVID. You want to talk about that? Let's not. We can talk about masks. We can talk about vaccines. We can talk about what's happening in the world around all of that. But let's not. You know why we don't want to do that? Because there's such tension around that. There's so many differences of opinions. You probably sat around a Thanksgiving table just a couple of weeks ago with family and friends. And if you're like me, at least, you tried as best you could to avoid all of those topics, right? You were hoping, like these soldiers in 1914, to declare just a moment of ceasefire, truce. Let's not talk about those things, because what we want, what we're all longing for deep down inside, is just a little bit of peace on earth. Can we just get a moment where everybody's not fighting, where everybody's not at odds? It feels like we live in a world that's just full of disregard and disrespect and disagreement, and it's such a, man, it's so hard right now. And a lot of people are looking for just peace, right? Maybe it's in relationships and marriage. Can we just stop fighting for a minute? Peace with our kids. Can we just get a moment where we're not at odds with our kids, or maybe with our parents? You know, can we lay our weapons down at work? Can we just go to work one day and there not be constant bickering and picking and fighting and warring and conflict? And everybody, what everybody wants, what everybody's longing for, what everybody's wondering is there such a thing as peace on earth? Truth is, though, this didn't start with World War I. It started way before that. It started before this moment, too. But if you go back to the year 732 BC, there was another conflict, another war. At this moment in world history, this conflict was between the ancient empire of the Assyrians and ancient Israel. And this war, this conflict, this battle ended in the Assyrian armies absolutely overwhelming and defeating and conquering the Israelite forces. And now Israel is living under the oppression of the Assyrians, under a foreign king, the Assyrian king. And if you had known that the Israelites were the people of God, you might wonder, where on earth is God? Has their God abandoned them? Truth was, they had abandoned God. The people of God had turned their back on God. They had turned their back from worshiping the one true God to worshiping foreign gods, to worshiping the occult. They had turned away from seeking God to seeking the wisdom and counsel from mediums who sought the counsel from the dead. They turned to that instead of turning to the counsel and the wisdom of the living God. They had completely turned their backs on God, and now they're living in a new kind of darkness. They've been defeated, and they're living under the rule and the reign of a foreign king. And because of that, they're hungry. Like, they're actually literally hungry. There is no food to be found, and their hunger manifests itself in anger. And now they're raging against each other, raging against their enemies, raging against their God. And we could move on from that moment pretty quickly, and I could tell you the rest of the story and what happens next and how it all unfolds. But it also might be wise just to pause for a moment there and just contemplate, just think about how that same plot line plays itself out in our lives over and over again. Like, how many times have you done that same thing, right? How many times have you turned your back on God and you've wondered, where on earth is God? But the truth is, God didn't abandon you. Somewhere along the way, you abandoned God. Instead of seeking the wisdom of the living God, you turned to the wisdom of this world, probably because you wanted to hear what you wanted to hear. You wanted the advice that you wanted to get. And so you turned away from God, the word of God, and the will of God, and you sought the wisdom of this world. And that decision left you in some dark places. You probably felt defeated at some point. You probably wondered, where is God? And then you started longing for things. You were desperate for something. You might even describe that feeling, that pain you were feeling as hunger. You're hungry for relationship, hungry for love, hungry for a second chance, hungry for things to be different. And you're wondering, where on earth is God? And you wonder if God has abandoned you. But if you were to be really, really honest with yourself, the truth is you abandoned God. And maybe for some of you that happened somewhere in your past, that's happened for all of us somewhere in our past, maybe that's happening for you right now in this present moment. But the good news of Isaiah, the good news of the gospel, is that God never abandoned his people. God has never abandoned you. Isaiah 9, he tells the story this way. This prophecy comes. He says, nevertheless, Isaiah 9, verse 1, that time of darkness and despair that the people of God are living in, it will not go on forever. The land of Zebulun and Naphtali will be humbled, but there will be a time in the future when Galilee of the Gentiles, which lies along the road that runs between the Jordan and the sea, will be filled with glory. This is the exact location where Jesus begins his ministry. Verse 2, the people who walk in darkness, Isaiah says, will see a great light. For those who live in a land of deep darkness, a light will shine. The same God who spoke the words, let there be light in darkness, and the sun, the moon, the stars were born, now speaks of a different kind of light that will be born, right? He goes on to say in verse 9, we just sang these words, for a child is born to us, a son is given to us, the government will rest upon his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father. And then listen to this last name that Isaiah gives to this child who will one day be born, this Messiah who will come. All the names that culminate, that climax in this one name, he says he will be called the Prince of Peace. I think this is fascinating because all those other names, Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, those could all be given to the God of the universe, the King of the universe, the King of kings, the one who spoke and in creation, you know, came into existence. All of those names could be given to God, our Father, but you wouldn't call God, you wouldn't call the creator of all things, you wouldn't call the King of the universe a prince, would you? Prince, that's a title. That's a name given to a human leader who would be born, who would then come and one day rule and reign. That's who you give the name, the title, Prince, to. And Isaiah says, this child that will be born, he will be called the Prince of Peace. Well, that can only mean one thing. That can only mean one thing, that the God of the universe, the one who authored this story, will one day put on flesh and step into this story that he authored. That the creator God, the one who created all things, will one day step into creation, wrap himself in human flesh, allow himself to be born and become fully human and fully divine. That's what this means. That one day the Prince of Peace will come. And he will come, and he will come to do what? To be the Prince of Peace, to set all things right, to make all things new. Everything that's gone wrong, he's going to correct it. He's going to change it. He's going to make it right, set it right, make it new. After all, this is what real peace, ultimate peace, true peace really is, right? This is what it means to be the Prince of Peace. to make things right. It's more than a ceasefire. It's more than a truce. Real peace, ultimate peace, actual peace is making things right. Taking what's been broken fully and completely, restoring it and making it new. And that's exactly what Jesus does, right? When he arrives on the scene, what's his very first miracle? You remember this? The very first thing that Jesus does as he begins his ministry, he's at a wedding feast in Cana, and all of a sudden there's a problem. There's no more wine. They're running out of wine at the wedding feast, and you're supposed to have good wine at a wedding feast. This is how it's supposed to work, but yet the wine is running out, and so what does Jesus do? He takes jars of water that would have been jars of water of disappointment and discouragement. It would have been bitter to end the wedding celebration with jars of water. He turns that miraculously into wine, and not just wine, but the best wine, wine of gladness and celebration. What does Jesus do when he arrives on the scene? Well, he sees the leper, and what does he do for the leper? He completely heals him and restores him. Why? Well, really, there's two reasons, two things at work, right? He's physically sick, and you and I, we weren't created to be physically sick. That's a symptom of the fall. That's a part of the brokenness of this world that we're living in. So he wants to completely restore him and heal his physical body. This is going to bring peace to his body, right? But not just that. As a leper, you're not allowed to live in relationship, in community with your family, with your friends inside the city walls. You have to be distanced. You have to live outside the city walls. This is social distancing before we knew what social distancing was. And Jesus says, you weren't created to live your life alone. You were created to live your life in relationship. So he fully heals him, fully restores him, and then fully returns him and reunites him with his family, with his community. This is what the Prince of Peace does over and over again. He's bringing peace. He's making peace. He's making things right, making things new. So he heals the blind, right? Because you weren't created to go through this world in darkness. You're created to go through this world with your eyes full of light. What does he do? He makes the lame walk. Why? Because you weren't created to limp along through life. You were created to walk with God. He over and over again, he takes every opportunity to take what's wrong and make it right. He raises the dead. Because you weren't created to die, you were created to live and to live forever. He forgives sin. Why? Because you're not supposed to go through this life living a life filled with sin that separates you from people and separates you from God. You were created to live in a relationship with each other and with God. This is what the Prince of Peace came to do. He came to make everything and set everything right. He is the Prince of Peace. And this is what the Prince of Peace does over and over and over again throughout his ministry. You can look at it through those lenses and see that everything that Jesus does, he's doing because, precisely because, he is the Prince of Peace. And as the Prince of Peace comes to earth, he brings a whole new kind of peace to earth. And the good news, the really good news that Christmas reminds us of is that the Prince of Peace is still working to bring peace on earth. Question, though, is what does that peace look like for you? In his book called Peace on Earth, The Christmas Truce of 1914, David Boyle writes that once darkness had fallen on Christmas Eve, the singing began. And I don't know about you, but I just wonder what songs the soldiers sang that night from those trenches. I wonder if they sang Silent Night. What would those lyrics have meant to a group of soldiers on both sides who fell asleep every night to the sound of machine gun fire? I wonder if they sang Joy to the World. What would those lyrics have meant to these men fighting day in and day out, living in a new kind of hell? I wonder if they sang the song, O Holy Night. Remember the last verse of that song? Truly he taught us to love one another. His law is love, and his gospel is what? Peace. His law is love, and his gospel. What does peace look like in a relationship? I think a lot of times what we default to is just wanting a truce. Can we just get a ceasefire? Can we just push pause? Can there be an absence of conflict in this relationship? But what does true peace look like for a relationship that's broken? Well, real peace in a relationship, it only comes about when there's reconciliation, right? Real peace in a relationship, it only happens when forgiveness is extended and received, when people are reunited and returned to truly and deeply caring for one another. Isn't that what real peace looks like? Isn't that what a lot of us are longing for? What does real peace look like in the world? We talk about world peace sometimes. What does that really look like? And what we would settle for, a lot of us, myself included sometimes, is just a treaty, a truce, a ceasefire, the absence of conflict. But that's not real peace. Real peace isn't a promise that we won't nuke each other, you know? That's not real peace. The Germans coined this phrase in World War I. They called it peace through victory. That's a sentiment I think a lot of people have carried forward into their own lives, into their own relationships, into their own businesses, in governments, you know, around the world still sort of lead from this idea of peace through victory. But that's not real peace. That sounds more like oppression. That's peace through violence. That's peace through domination. That's not real peace. What would world peace really look like? You ever thought about that? Real peace that's more than a ceasefire, real world peace that's more than a treaty and a truce. Real world peace, that would be everybody in the world working together for everyone else's benefit. Man, what a wonderful world that would be. What does real peace look like? How in the world can we experience peace on earth? I think there's only one way. Peace on earth. It only enters our world when you allow the Prince of Peace to live in you. And again, this is the good news of Christmas. Christ came, but he didn't come just to be born in a manger. He came to take up residence, to dwell, to live in you and in me. And whenever you and I allow the Prince of Peace to rule and reign in our hearts, something actually happens. Something actually changes. Now the Prince of Peace living in us has an opportunity in everyday ordinary ways to bring peace on earth in the here and now. And I just want to encourage you today, I want to encourage us today as we enter into this Christmas season to think about what would actually change if you allowed the Prince of Peace to take up residence in your heart and your life and to live in you and to live through you. And when and where possible, to bring about real peace, real change, to really make a difference in this world, in those relationships, when you're out shopping, when you're doing all the Christmas fun. And I know a lot of this season brings a whole lot of stress for a whole lot of people, but what if instead in us there was a peace welling up from within us and we allowed the Prince of Peace to actually tangibly change the world around us so that people around us could experience peace? Church, if you would, let's stand. So at some point the following day, the fighting resumed. Shots were fired, and those men who just a few hours before were singing songs and playing soccer and swapping stories were now firing bullets at each other again. And that war continued on for 4 more bloody years. I say that because at some point, maybe even this week, there's going to be a fight. Shots will be fired. And you're going to have a decision to make. Will you keep fighting? Or will you decide to take a different path? Will you choose the narrow way of the Prince of Peace? And will you look for opportunities when and where you can to live differently? and to allow the Prince of Peace to live in you and to live through you, and to bring a little bit of peace on earth. It makes me wonder, what does it mean for those of us who've decided to be disciples of Jesus? What does it mean for us to be disciples of the Prince of Peace? Well, first, it has to mean, right, that we allow the Prince of Peace to have the rule and the reign of our hearts, and that begins in our baptism. And for those of us who have entered those waters of baptism, who have gone through the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus with Jesus and been resurrected to new life, this is where it begins for us. And if you haven't done that, if you have not entered the waters of baptism and become a disciple of Jesus, a disciple of the Prince of Peace, I want to invite you into this life. It's the best life. Those of us who are striving to be disciples of Jesus, we aren't perfect. But we're striving every day to let the Prince of Peace rule and reign in our hearts. For those of us who have made that decision, I want to call us deeper into that discipleship and to allow the Prince of Peace to live in us, to dwell in us, and to live through us, to make a difference in us so that when and where possible, we can be people who bring peace to God. That's my prayer for us this Christmas. If you are in a season of life or in a place today where you're not experiencing that peace and you want to experience that peace, or maybe you haven't been baptized and you want to step into those waters and become a disciple of Jesus, we would love to pray with you. We'd love to help you. I'm going to invite our elders who are in the room to kind of make themselves available in the back of the room. And as we sing, I would invite you to go find one of them and talk with one of them. They would love nothing more than to usher you into the presence of the Prince of Peace. For the rest of us, though, let's live out this week into that calling of what it means to be people who are following Jesus and bringing peace to earth. Let's sing.